Chapter 5. Stiles isn't thrilled with the idea of setting another fire in a residential district, but he's also not keen on the idea of charging headlong into enemy sorcerer territory. He doesn't dare set the house itself on fire, in case Justin and Aiden are there, and he's hoping to hell they are. "So how do we get him out of the house?" he asks, directing the question to the pack at large. "We could just stake it out," Allison says. "I mean, the guy has to eat. He can't stay inside forever." "He might have laid supplies, though," Scott points out. Allison gives a little shrug. "I'm just saying, a 6-hour stakeout might not be the worst of ideas." Stiles considers, then shakes his head. He wants this shit dealt with. There are too many things that could go wrong in that scenario. What if he leaves out the back door? What if he smells the wolves? What if he has a car in the garage and leaves without becoming accessible to them? "No," he says. "We need to make him leave in a manner we can predict." "He's a guy, right?" Erica says. When Stiles nods, she says, "Okay." Then she unbuttons the top 2 buttons on her shirt and assumes an expression of helplessness. "Oh my gosh, mister, can you help me out? My tire just went flat and I have no clue how to change a tire." Lydia lets out a quiet snort and says, "Then how do you live this long?" Stiles is grinning. "Yes, good," he says. "Allison, how do you feel about playing a damsel in distress?" "Well, I don't have Erica's rack, but I think I can pull it off," Allison says. Erica pouts at being sidelined, but Stiles reminds her that it has to be a human who approaches him, because he'll be able to smell any of the wolves. At this, Ravender looks in curiosity at Stiles and says, "Many alphas can hide their scent, although I suppose it would not matter to you, being in that you are not a wolf." "It's never really come up," Stiles says with a nod. "Okay, so Allison is our point, and I'll be her backup. I will wait in the disabled car, but Allison, tase him at the goddamn door if you have to," he adds, and she nods. "The rest of you will, as before, surround the house, but I'm pairing you off. I want everyone to be with someone who can watch their back." He divides them into pairs based on fighting skill, so each weaker or inexperienced pack member has a better fighter at their back. He knows that Derek will want to be as close to him as possible, and that he'll be more focused on Stiles' safety and well-being than his partner, so he pairs him with Scott, who will have similar problems. Isaac is with Lydia, Boyd with Danny, and Erica with Mac. "Take care of her," Stiles says seriously to Erica, who nods. Of course, Allison isn't able to play the hot babe lost in the woods quite as well as Erica was able to, in the safety of their cabin. The temperature is dropping rapidly, and all of them are well bundled up. Derek is the only exception. He hates anything that might hamper him from making a full shift in a dangerous situation, so he's still only wearing a sweater and jeans. He'd probably only be in a tank top if Stiles hadn't gotten annoyed at him. Higher wolf temperatures and healing factors aside, it's well below freezing. The snow crunches underneath their feet as they head to surround the house. It's a modest 2-story in a somewhat ramshackle neighborhood. It isn't a dump, per se, but the houses are old, and they look it. Everything is still decorated for Christmas, which startles Stiles, although he can't really say why. It feels like months have passed since his peaceful celebration of the holiday. It's hard to believe that it's been less than 48 hours since Yasmin showed up on his doorstep. Allison dresses in a lumpy jacket and a colorful scarf and hat, which has the bonus of making her look somewhat younger than she actually is. It'll help her play the helpless card a little better. Stiles crouches behind the Jeep, tense and anxious. He realizes that he's expecting that this won't go well. He can't say why he feels that way exactly. It's just a gut feeling. Things are more complicated than they had first realized, and he's missing pieces of the puzzle. Too many. It's the accomplice that bothers him. Gabrielle Kahn has no family, and Clara assured him that nobody else from their pack has gone missing. So who is this mysterious man that picked Kahn up at the hotel? who's in this deep enough to have gotten a fake identity just to rent this house. Something's wrong, and he can't anticipate, can't prepare the way he normally would. So when Allison rings the bell, and nobody answers, Stiles isn't surprised at all. They wait the space of about 30 seconds. She tries again, but Stiles already knows that nobody is going to answer. And even if they did, they wouldn't fall for her damsel in distress routine. There are plenty of houses to go to. There's no reason someone with a flat tire would ring the same bell over and over again instead of moving on to the next one. Fuck this shit, he decides. They're going to go on the offensive and see what happens. He walks up beside Allison. She nods at him and takes out her lockpicks. She works as quickly and quietly as she can, and a few minutes later, the knob turns under her hand. Stiles gestures to indicate that she should cover him while he opens it, and she nods, taking out her crossbow and holding it at the ready. Stiles pushes open the door to reveal a dark, narrow hallway. He grimaces a little. Close quarters are always difficult for him, and in such an uncertain situation, he doesn't like it at all. Fortunately for him, he doesn't need to go down the hallway. Unfortunately for him, that's because the attack occurs at the precise moment he takes a step forward. The creature comes screaming out from the depths of the hallway, literally making a screeching noise that sends Stiles reeling backwards and clapping his hands over his ears involuntarily. Allison handles it better, taking a bare moment to aim before pulling the trigger on the crossbow. The bolt hits the creature squarely in the chest, and its momentum carries it past them, where it sprawls out on the lawn, twitching. What the fu- Stiles has time for, and then a flood of them pours out of the hallway. There are at least a dozen. They're human-shaped, human-sized, but blue. Blue and winged. With too much hair to be human, and their posture is wrong. Sort of hunched over. Are those winged fucking monkeys? He hears someone shout. One of his pack. He's not even sure who. And they are. Created almost exactly in the image from the movies, but without any of the humor. Their mouths are cram-packed with sharp teeth. Their fingers end in wickedly curved claws. Stiles can feel one of those hands full of claws shred his jacket and shirt, only to encounter the chainmail underneath. Then he hears Allison scream. Above him, he looks up and sees that one of the monkeys has grabbed her and lifted her off her feet. He leaps up and grabs her by the ankle. For a moment, they hang there, suspended. Then Allison shoves the taser into the creature's midsection and pulls the trigger. It lets out another shrill screech and drops her. Everything dissolves into chaos. There are screams and shouts everywhere. The snarl of wolves, crunches of bone, the smell of blood and singed fur. Stiles sees Lydia get grabbed by one of the monkeys and lifted off her feet the same way Allison was. Erica springs up onto the top of the jeep and launches herself at the creature, but another monkey swoops in and grabs her before she connects. Shit! Stiles takes aim with his .38, but then hesitates. He's not good enough to be sure he'll hit the monkey and not the wolf. His gun is loaded with wolfsbane bullets. It always is. And although he knows the cure, it's not a certain remedy, especially if the bullet hits something vital. He lowers his gun. Boyd and Danny have leapt after the monkeys at a full run. Allison is as calm as ever, shooting arrow after arrow and dropping the creatures from the sky. Then one of them just flies straight into her. Stiles is pretty sure she shoots it on its way in, but its weight still carries her down. It disables her long enough for another of the creatures to grab her and take to the sky. In almost the exact same moment, two of them grab Derek by each arm and yank him up off the ground. Stiles lets out a shout and jumps, grabbing his Lupa by the waist. Derek struggles and twists, but can't get free. The monkeys are stronger than reason could possibly account for. Let go! He shouts, as they rise 10, 20, 30 feet off the ground. Not a chance! Stiles shouts back. Derek twists again and yells, Let go now or the fall will kill you! Stiles looks up and sees the fear in Derek's eyes. He's right. If they get much further off the ground and one of the monkeys manages to shake him free, he'll be dead. Their gazes lock for the briefest of moments. Then Stiles nods and forces his grip on Derek to loosen. He can't make himself let go all the way, but one more good shake and he's falling. Someone grabs him on the way down and he thinks for a moment that it's one of the monkeys, but he keeps going down. Then he hits the ground with a thud and goes into a roll. He realizes that one of the wolves had grabbed him as he was falling and taken him into a controlled tumble. The impact still jars the breath out of him, but he thinks his bones are intact. He scrambles to his feet, grabbing at the shirt of whoever caught him. It's Scott, some distant part of his brain notes, to drag them up with him. "With me!" he shouts, and throws himself towards the Jeep. He doesn't care who or how many of the wolves manage to get in before he floors the accelerator and takes off, following the monkeys as they fly over the town with Derek in their grasp. Ahead of him, he can see several of the others, barely specks in the distance, with their own captives. "Turn right," someone shouts, and he realizes that Scott has jumped on top of the Jeep and is shouting directions down to him so he can concentrate on the road. That's good. He sees a cross street and turns the wheel, taking the corner so fast that they nearly fishtail on the slick ground. But the monkeys are gaining altitude, becoming fainter in the distance, and Stiles knows they can't keep up. He knows that, but he keeps driving anyway. Even after he can no longer see Derek and Scott's directions have gone silent, he keeps driving because he doesn't know what else he can do. Then, abruptly, he feels the bond to Derek go dark and silent. It's like someone slammed a wall down between them. It's so sudden and disorienting that dizziness washes over him and the world goes black around the edges. He hears Isaac yelp, "Whoa!" and then wrests the steering wheel out of his hands as the car goes into a spin. He has just enough presence of mind to slam on the brakes. Isaac keeps the Jeep steady as it grinds to a halt. Stiles staggers out of the car and leans against the wall to a building, leaning over and heaving until his stomach is empty. Then things settle around him. He wipes the back of his hand over his mouth and stumbles back to the car. Isaac is leaning over Scott, who's on his knees beside it, looking about as bad as Stiles feels. "Allison," Stiles chokes out. Scott shakes his head. I can't feel her," he says, hoarse and unsteady. "We'd better get back to the others." Isaac holds up a hand. "I'll drive." Stiles tosses him the keys without argument. He gets into the passenger seat and sits with his head between his knees, hands braced on the back of his neck. Things back at the rented house are chaotic, but not as bad as Stiles feared. The monkeys, being creatures of magic, dissolved into ash as soon as they were killed, so they don't have bodies everywhere. There are no police, no sirens. Stiles doesn't know if there was magic done to keep anyone from noticing, or if the neighborhood has somehow been emptied of people. He's not about to stick around and find out. He looks at the house distrustfully, but it seems to have emptied its cache of nasties.
"Yes, and Ethan already went through it," Boyd pants, out of breath from fighting. "No one there. It's dead empty."
Stiles gives a little nod. Slowly, like he's in a dream, he reaches out and picks up Allison's fallen crossbow. Scott takes it from him, clutching at it with white-knuckled hands. They pile into their cars and drive several blocks away. He sees an empty parking lot next to a store that closed sometime in the dark ages and pulls over. Yasmin tumbles out of the car.
"Stiles, are you okay?
I'm fine." Stiles looks up and hears her quick intake of breath. He knows his eyes are glowing crimson with rage and distress he can't hold back. He takes quick stock of his pack. Some of them have torn and bloody clothes, but the injuries are healed. The mage hadn't bothered to program a lack of healing into this new beastie. He wonders if there are limits to what the magic can create. If he had concentrated on strength and speed, he shakes his head. It's irrelevant. "Who's missing?" he bites out, scanning the crowd. Yasmin and Ethan are both there. He sees Boyd supporting Danny, and he knows Isaac and Scott are with them. That's it.
They're missing Derek, Allison, Lydia, Erica, and Mac. That's half his pack. Gone in the blink of an eye. Jesus fucking Christ, Isaac swears shakily, as they all take stock. Styles stares at Yasmin as she hastily knuckles tears off her cheeks. She's suddenly the only girl standing in a clump of guys. It seems important to him. He can't put his finger on why. Then he looks at Ethan, likewise trembling, blood staining the leg of his jeans. Did he have a lupa? Styles asks abruptly. What? Yasmin asks. The alpha you killed, of the sorcerer pack, did he have a lupa? Styles asks. He realizes he's shouting and tries to tone it down. I don't think so, Yasmin says. I mean, we can usually tell. That's true, and Styles knows it. Justin had figured out Derek was his lupa before he had, although he was suffering from a lack of education. But if they didn't want you to know for some reason, could they hide it? Like, if they had a pact that if one of them was killed, the other would take horrible revenge? Ethan asks, slowly, picking up on Styles' train of thought. Look at this, Styles says, with a sharp gesture. Look at who's missing. You two both lost your lupa. I bet he meant to grab May or Ravender too, but wasn't able to since Ravender grabbed her and ran. Then there's us. If he has a half a clue who I am, grabbing Derek makes sense. It's common knowledge that Derek is my lupa. The rest of us? Well, he didn't know. So what did they do? They grabbed all the girls. That gives them a pretty good chance of splitting up any existing pairs. Jesus, Yasmin says, rubbing her hands over her face. Does it matter? Denny asks, somewhat hesitant. Well, Scott says, it means he probably won't kill them. He looks at Styles, hopefully. Right? I think it's been pretty well proven that if he wanted to kill any of us, a whole lot of us wouldn't be breathing right now, Styles says. No, it's slow torture. He's not satisfied by killing us. He wants us to suffer the way he has. He lets out a breath. He can deal with this. He has to deal with this. He takes out his phone and dials Deaton. The druid picks up on the second ring. Is everything okay? He asks, in that tone which means he already knows that everything isn't. I need Jackson, Styles says, forcing himself to remain calm. His voice only cracks a little. How soon can he get here? There's several long moments of muffled conversation. Styles shifts back and forth from foot to foot, trying not to scream. Then Deaton gets back on the phone. He's booking a flight from Fresno to Portland. It's about a 7-hour... What's that? Another pause. No, that one had a layover. Hang on. He's looking for something nonstop. This next pause is somewhat lengthier. He can't find anything without a stop, but he did find one without a layover. It'll take 4 hours. We'll pick him up at the airport. Tell him to text me his flight info. All right. It'll take a little time for me to undo the binding on him. Styles has to choke the words out. Okay, and tell him... His voice breaks. What can he possibly say to Jackson that will impress upon the teenager the importance of his arriving in Portland and not fucking off to have his jollies with black magic again? Styles, Deaton says. It's fine. He'll be there. Deaton hangs up without another word. Styles has to take a few deep breaths and gather himself together while the rest of the pack looks on uneasily. Then his phone chirps. He looks down. Jackson's flight is leaving just after 5 and is set to arrive at 9:30. Styles prays that nothing will be delayed. Danny, I want you to go pick Jackson up. Take Boyd with you. Danny nods. Portland's only like an hour away. What are we doing until then? Styles pushes both hands through his hair, leaving it standing up in lopsided spikes. Neither of the identities they had were used in the area except for places they've already checked. He doesn't know what his next move should be, and he hates that almost as much as he hates the dead air at the end of his bond with Derek. Scott clears his throat quietly. We should maybe call Chris?
Fuck,
Stiles says with conviction. There's no way he wants to call Chris Argent and tell him that his princess got abducted by flying monkeys. He has no excuse not to, however. But if he does, Chris will also be on the next flight up. Maybe that wouldn't be a bad thing, Stiles reasons. The hunter has years of experience. Maybe handing him the reins would be a good idea. The only problem is that he's not 100% sure that Chris can be trusted not to hurt the members of the Alpha Pack. They are killers. And not only that, but they've killed hunters. In self-defense, but still. Chris would be justified in executing them under the code. And he doesn't think that the Alpha Pack members that are left would be any more thrilled to see him than he would be to see them. He killed Callie. She deserved it, but still, it can't be a fond memory for any of them. We'll call Chris when and if we have to, he finally says. But I don't think we're at that point yet. There's a lot of bad blood between the Alpha Pack and the Hunters, and I... A thought suddenly occurs to him. One thought leads to another, and he stares out into space, watching the dominoes fall. What is it? Yasmin asks, looking at him closely. Stiles holds up a hand, and then slowly starts to talk through his theory. Let me lay this out. Just a number of facts. Fact one, Khan has an accomplice. It's not a relative or a former pack member, and it's not casual either. The guy invested enough that he got himself a fake identity and rented a house and bought a car. Fact two, hunters are pretty good at moving quickly and quietly under the radar, and probably frequently have to procure fake identities. They also all seem to favor those damn black SUVs, which was the type of car the accomplice was driving. Fact three, the hunters are aware of the Sorcerer Pack. Chris said that hunters had been sent after them, but Justin got there first. So what if the accomplice is one of the Alpha Pack hunters? That all seems pretty damn logical to me, Yasmin says. Ethan nods, but then adds, but I'm not sure where it gets us. Two things. For one, it means that their partnership is probably fragile and founded on a hell of a lot of mistrust and the enemy of my enemy is my friend. And partnerships like that tend to fail or be open to manipulation, Stiles says. But that's something that we'll need more later than we do now. Secondly, it gives us an avenue of investigation. He chews on his lower lip. I need to find out who the hunters that went after the Sorcerer Pack were, and I need to find out who the hunters currently on the Alpha Pack's tail are. That explains something else, too, Scott says suddenly. And Stiles gives him a questioning look. Well, these guys seem to know a lot about us, specifically about your methods, like the decoy hotel room and everything. After what happened to the last Alpha Pack hunters, a lot of them might have made study of your methods. That's somewhat terrifying, Stiles says, but no less true. I just don't know how they would have known I would have even gotten involved. Look, it can't be a coincidence that all this happened here, Boyd says. Only a day's drive away from Beacon Hills. Maybe you were always meant to get involved. Stiles rubs a hand over his face. He doesn't say what he's thinking. That with a sorcerer involved, it was completely possible that the idea to go to him had been planted in Yasmin's mind. I'm going to text Chris. If he calls up the hunter, there's too much chance he'll ask to talk to Allison, or ask why she's not the one calling. Let's get that information and go from there. Derek comes to with a start and looks around wildly. He swallows hard and takes a deep breath, even though it feels like he can't get enough air past the metal, silver-lined collar that's wrapped snugly around his neck. And then he takes another. And another, before he realizes that he's breathing far too fast and the panic is starting to win. The next breath he pulls in is through his nose, and it's calmed down a little by the scent of pack. He can see them, yes, but scent is something a little deeper, more visceral, and it calms the panic. Because even though he's separated from Styles, he's not alone. The last thing he remembers is the monkeys dropping in altitude as they started to fly over a more sparsely treed area of the forest. It looked like there had been a forest fire there recently. There was a wide patch of empty land, and from the aerial view, he had gotten a look at the circle drawn in it, surrounded by arcane symbols. One of the other monkeys had flown over to him and just hovered in front of him for a moment, before one hand had lashed out and clawed right through his shirt, snatching the protection charm he was wearing and snapping the cord so it came off in its hand. Then his captors had dropped him, still a good 3 stories high. The impact itself hadn't knocked him unconscious, he doesn't think, but all the same, he doesn't remember anything after that. He presumes that has something to do with whatever the spell he had been dropped into was for. Once the panic backs down a bit, he purposely ignores his own situation, lest he lose his grip on rational thought, and turns his attention to the others. He can already tell that Styles isn't with him, but is surprised to see that besides him, it's only the girls. They're all chained to heavy support beams, sitting on the cement floor with metal cuffs around their wrists that draw their hands behind their backs. They're then connected to the collar before running to the wall with enough slack that they could sit or stand. The walls around them are solid brick, with no windows other than some half windows at the top of the room. A basement. He's glad Isaac's not there. There's a solid steel door on one side of the room with a bar across it. Across the room, Justin and Aiden are held with similar bonds. "Is anybody hurt? Besides them?" he adds, indicating the two alphas with his chin. They look like crap. Blood had crusted on one side of Justin's face, which is practically solid purple with bruises. Aiden's clothes are shredded and stained with blood. "Nothing too bad," Erica says. "Just a few bruises."
"I broke a nail," Lydia says. She sounds pissed.
"I don't think I skinned my knees like that since the 3rd grade, Mac reports.
"And my shoulder is dislocated," Allison announces, "which someone gets to help me fix."
"You just need me to brace you?" Erica asks, squirming over so she can press her shoulder and upper arm into Allison's back.
"Yeah, and for you not to be grossed out by the crunching noises you're about to hear."
Allison takes a minute to make sure the sleeve of her sweater is between her skin and the metal cuff to protect her, before she turns herself sideways and plants a foot against one of the supports. Then she grits her teeth together and pushes out with her leg, the cuff pulling at her arm, and Erica keeping her upright until she can twist and let her arm slide back into joint. She goes limp against Erica.
"That sucked," she says. Mac tries not to gag.
"That sounded painful," Lydia says. To Derek, she adds, "What about you? You don't look so hot, in a manner of speaking." Derek swallows hard, tipping his chin back to stare at nothing. One fist clenches and releases a couple of times before he just shakes his head. He doesn't care about his own injuries. He doesn't dare analyze his own situation because otherwise he'll freak out.
"Okay," Lydia says, not wanting to push the issue.
She looks over at the alphas. To be honest, she barely recognized Justin under all the blood and bruises. If she hadn't known he was missing, she might not have guessed it was him.
"You two okay?"
"What the hell are you guys doing here?"
Justin asks, sounding baffled, his voice only a little bit slurred. Derek tilts his head over to look at them.
"Yasmin showed up on our doorstep, saying she needed help."
"You've seen Yaz?" Justin goes from being a hurt and bewildered young man to an alpha in moments. Everything about him sharpens and snaps into focus. "She's okay?" The tone of his voice implies that the answer had better be yes. Just bumps and bruises. And scared, Derek offers quickly. He knows better than to fuck with an alpha, no matter how messed up they might be. We had the rest of your pack. Not all healthy, but accounted for. My brother? Aiden demands.
He was hurt, Lydia says. We actually had to bust him out of the hospital. He had some cracked ribs and a pretty bad concussion. But last time we saw him, he seemed to be doing okay. May was hurt pretty badly. Ravender's been taking care of her. But it helped that we have a pack member with some real medical training. Scott says she's going to pull through.
And having people to look after will help him keep his temper in check, Allison adds. She knows Scott hates it when he loses control. She starts to slowly pull herself up into a sitting position under her own steam. No offense to your boy there, but I wouldn't be concerned about his temper if I was in these guys' shoes, Erica says. Styles is gonna go ballistic. Do these jokers even realize who they're up against?
I hope not, Derek says. He shifts a little, trying to find a position that's a little more comfortable. But when he tries to brace himself with one hand, it just moves with the other, and he freezes. Instead, he pulls his knees up to his chest and takes a minute to remember to breathe. I hope they have no idea at all.
This is fucking ridiculous, Justin proclaims to the ceiling. I am the leader of the goddamn Alpha Pack, one of the most powerful werewolves in the world. I should not be so relieved that some freaking teenager is the one trying to rescue me.
I was relieved when he was the one trying to save me, Mac offers. You know, after I was convinced he wasn't going to kill me.
Yeah, sure you were relieved, but you're... Wait, who are you? Justin frowns. You guys have new pack members?
Dude, we're up to 10 now, Erica says. 10 and a half if you count Jake.
Mac holds up a hand and waves, or at least tries to, although she ends up holding up two hands.
Hi, I'm Mac. What's your name?
I'm Justin, he says. That's Aiden. 10 and a half?
Jake, Allison says. He's sort of an honorary member. He's my cousin, and his parents are real assholes. So we sort of stole him, and then my dad basically adopted him. But Dad's dad, so Jake isn't allowed to actually be part of the pack until he's thought long and hard about it, and turned 18. He's 16 now.
Aiden is frowning at them. You can't just...
Justin gives a little snort.
Yeah, like Styles doesn't do whatever the hell he wants. I don't think the word can't is in that kid's vocabulary.
Sure it is, Erica says. As in, no, Erica, we can't have sex here.
Derek rolls his eyes and mumbles something like, why me? Justin just shakes his head a little. He's the one who had explained what a lupa is to Styles, so he's well aware that Derek and Styles are a non-traditional pairing. It doesn't surprise him a bit that Styles has chosen to get his needs met by another member of the pack. So if it's 10, and Mac is the only new face I see, who are the other two?
Boyd was not long after we met you guys, Allison offers.
She's still leaning against Erica, as much as for comfort as support. We picked him out and invited him into the pack. He's like our backup den mother. He has 4 younger siblings, and unlike Scott, he won't nearly kill us all by confusing furniture polish with spray grease. She smiles at the memory, and then looks away, biting her lip. She and Scott have been apart before, sure, but this is the first time he's been taken away from her.
And then Danny, Lydia adds. He was sort of an accident, part of the whole mess with Stone.
He really doesn't like lizards, Mac says.
Right, I heard about him, Justin says. He's the one you had to get stoned before he could shift. Styles told me about him.
Lydia shrugs.
Danny's always been big on self-control.
The longer they banter, the more Derek feels the tension start to build up in his spine. He gives a little shudder, letting the conversation wash around him while he struggles against the restraints. He can't feel Styles at the other end of their bond, can't tell what's going on with him, can't be sure he's okay. It's terrifying.
"Whoa there, buddy," Erica says when she notices. She's chained to the same post as he is. Mac and Lydia are together as well, and Allison is by herself.
"Slow down. You're going to hurt yourself." Derek struggles for another minute or two, but true to Erica's statement, one of his arms starts to protest loudly enough that he actually has to listen. He slumps onto one side, panting.
"Dude," Justin says, "you okay?"
Lydia gives Justin a withering look.
"Does he look okay?"
she asks tartly, but then immediately modifies her voice with something more soothing.
"Derek, Styles is going to come for us. You know that. Try not to freak out."
"It's not..." Derek has to stop and swallow, because everything is throbbing in time to his heartbeat, the pounding in his head, the nasty, burning, grinding feeling of the bones in his arm, the ache in his chest.
"That's not it. Of course he's coming."
Somewhat hesitantly, Mac decides that cuddling is in order, or at least as close as she can get. It had made her feel better when she was scared, and although she wouldn't say it out loud, Derek smells scared, even though he looks pissed off. She squirms around until she's closer to Derek and manages to move them around until his head and shoulders were pillowed on her legs instead of the hard cement. Aiden is the one tactless enough to say,
"If that's not what you're worried about, why are you having a freak out?"
"Maybe," Erica says, "it's because nosy tampons like yourself are asking questions about things that are none of your business."
Aiden's jaw sags open a little, and he stares at her. Sure, he remembers her being kind of mouthy at the trial, but he would remember if she started slinging around insults like that. Derek just huffs a small laugh, because Erica is cowed by no one and always hilarious, and she can always be counted on to protect her pack.
"Don't feel too persecuted," Allison says. "She's said worse to people she likes better."
"That's hot," Justin says, looking at Erica speculatively. "Are you open to the concept of three ways?"
"Oh my God,"
Lydia says, stifling laughter in her palm. Erica considers this briefly. "With you and Yasmin? Yeah, I'd hit that."
"Sweet,"
Justin says. "We'll talk later." Some of the tension washes out of Derek as he listens to his pack manage to joke around, even in a situation like this. No one would go so far as to say he's relaxing, but he's no longer on such a hair trigger, for the moment. Having physical contact with Mac helps remind him of the here and now, so he doesn't get lost in the memories and the fear that goes with them. Before further plans can be made for sexual escapades, there's a screech of hinges that makes all of the wolves flinch, and the door on one side of the room opens. The man who enters is nondescript. He's Hispanic and of a middling height, dressed in jeans and a flannel shirt.
"I can see you're all enjoying yourselves," he remarks, somewhat sourly.
There's a beat of silence. And then Erica says cheerfully, "I think I saw a porno like this once." And Derek nearly chokes on a bubble of laughter.
"Is there any porno you haven't seen?"
Lydia asks, arching her eyebrows at Erica.
"Oh, sure. Tons," Erica replies, her tone matter of fact. "I don't like bodily fluids unless it's cum or spit. That rules out a whole category of porn right there."
"Thanks for sharing that," Aiden says. "Justin, you should make a note. You know, if you're gonna be..."
"As fascinating as this conversation is," their captor interrupts, "I figured I would come in and check on you. Those collars aren't too tight, are they?"
Allison rolls her eyes.
"Who writes your dialogue?" "I'll take that as a no,"
he replies. Of course. I'm sure you must have a great deal of questions for me, now that you've seen that I'm behind this. Everyone seated on the floor gives him a blank look. Then Mac raises her hand. I have a question. It's not because you're new, Lydia says with an elegant shrug. I've been in the pack as long as anyone here, and I have no idea who that is.
Oh, Mac turns to their captor. Okay, who are you?
The man is studying their blank looks with narrowed eyes. It's clear that he doesn't find their banter amusing at all.
You are new, so of course you wouldn't recognize me. But the rest of you can stop pretending. It's embarrassing.
Derek quirks an eyebrow at him, but it's Allison who responds.
I'm not sure who's supposed to be embarrassed here, but I'm pretty sure we aren't. We're just confused.
And this from you, the man says, his voice heavy with sarcasm. If anyone here is going to know who I am, it should be the Argent Princess.
Hey, guys, Erica says. I think he's a hunter.
Allison's eyebrows climb.
Just because I'm an Argent doesn't mean I know every hunter out there. I'm sure I've never worked with you, and pretty sure my father hasn't. At least not recently. So, fuck you, I guess.
Now he's clearly irritated. My name is Ruben Gutierrez, he snaps. My brother is Luis Gutierrez. Does that ring any bells?
There's a little bit of visual conferring going on between the pack.
No, not really, Allison finally has to admit.
It does sound vaguely familiar, Lydia says. Luis Gutierrez does. I mean, the fact that you bothered to mention him means that he's probably the one we directly interacted with.
If by directly interacted with, you mean you got him sentenced to 15 years in prison, Ruben snaps, then sure.
Look, I hate to break this to you, Erica says, but Styles gets a lot of assholes put in jail. It's one of his main strategies. So that doesn't help as much as you think it does.
On top of that, the people he has put in jail deserve it. Or something worse. So I guess what we should really be asking is, why did Styles have Luis Gutierrez put in prison?
Allison follows up.
He was one of the Alpha Pack hunters. Justin speaks up suddenly. I don't remember the name, but the family resemblance is there. He was one of the guys that Styles got put in jail after the shootout in Beacon Hills. Or so I would presume.
Oh, Allison says, and then smiles. It's far from a pleasant expression.
So he was the asshole that shot Isaac in the stomach, and Scott had to dig the bullet out with nothing but his bare hands? Or was he the one who got Lydia in the leg, or Derek clean through the chest? Or maybe he'd like to be the one to say he nearly blew Styles' head off, but only got his ear instead. Which one was he?
He was an extremely good shot, Ruben says. So I'm guessing it wasn't the last.
Allison shows her teeth, and it would be very hard for an outsider to see her as one of the humans in the pack with that look on her face.
Well, since all of us made it out alive, I'd have to say that his aim was actually shit.
Ruben's eyes narrow, and he shakes his head.
Perhaps in time, he'll be known as the hunter who almost killed the boy in red.
Almost only counts in horseshoes and hand grenades, asshole, Erica says.
Will you get to the fucking point already?
You really don't remember having met me, Ruben says.
The arrogance astonishes me.
I'm not really sure you can call them arrogant because you failed to make an impression, Max says. I mean, I'm just saying.
Justin lets out a snort of laughter.
You could try something novel, like telling us who the fuck you are and why you're so pissed at us, instead of sitting around making veiled comments and waiting for us to figure it out on our own, Lydia suggests. Just a thought.
We met at the Conclave, he says.
Okay, were you pretentious blowhard number 1, 2, or 3? Erica asks.
You know, those two,
Allison says, pointing at Mac and Lydia. Weren't at the conclave, and the rest of us were a little busy. Reuben shrugs. Your Alpha would remember me. He did address me directly, although certainly without any of the respect I was due. Justin gives a snort. Yeah, you should hear the way the little prick talks to me. It's nothing personal. Well, it might have been personal if you were acting like a cunt critter, Erica says with a shrug, which you certainly are now. Oh, Jesus, Aiden says, and then they're all laughing at her language. It's Derek who looks up, having finally calmed down enough to really analyze their surroundings and what's going on. You were the one he argued with during his impromptu seminar, the guy who stormed out at the end. Allison takes her cue from Derek, from Styles' Lupa, and forces herself to calm down and back away from the anger, even laced by the hilarity that only Erica can add. Then she casts her mind back to the meet and greet that Styles had held at the end of the conclave, the man he had argued with. Right, the guy who hated it that some people were actually listening and others were willing to at least think about the fact that werewolves are people too. Justin gives Allison a somewhat appalled look. Styles got up and said that at the conclave? Yes? Allison gives him a game smile. Look, the whole thing turned really awkward when the Council of Elders did some things that they shouldn't have, and Styles was outed, and there was sort of a werewolf issue. He had to make the best of a bad situation, and it actually really worked out. Her face falls. Until now. Justin can only shake his head. That kid, I swear. Don't sound so pleased with yourselves, Reuben says. There are plenty of other hunters who agree with me. I don't know what Styles' game is, and I don't care. It ends now. That's not new, Derek says. There are always hunters out to kill his pack. He curls up a little closer to Mac, or at least tries to. It's not a game, Allison informs Reuben coldly. And I really don't see how you're so confident. You've pretty much declared war on our pack, the Alpha Pack, along with most of my family, and you've probably pissed off a lot of other hunters while you're at it. Well, that would be telling, Reuben says. Let's just say that your precious Alpha isn't the only one who can be underhanded. Wait, I'm confused, Justin says. If this is about you getting revenge on Styles for being Styles, a sentiment which I can at least partially understand, what the hell am I doing here? I swear to God, if you used us as bait for that kid, we are going to be pissed, Aiden adds. Reuben shrugs. Strange times make strange bedfellows, he says. Khan wanted the Alpha Pack. I wanted the boy in red. Justin's face goes flat and deadly. Well, the next time you see Khan, tell him that I never leave a job unfinished. Another shrug. I doubt very much he'll care about your threats, Reuben says. He checks his watch. If you'll excuse me, he says, and leaves without a word. Jesus. Derek lets his head thud back against the support beam, and nobody seems to know what to say.